Good morning. I'm Sarah Abrams. I'm the Associate Dean for Academic Affairs in the College of Nursing and Health Sciences at the University of Vermont. I'm presenting actually in lieu of my co-investigator, Ricky Maltby, who is doing simultaneously part two of this study. And you unfortunately get the statistics and not the pictures, as she's doing the qualitative piece of our research. Nonetheless, if you have questions about that, I can address them since we have worked together on this for the last 3 years. So these are the results of our pilot study. We have no relationships to disclose. as you know, we all aim for the goals and targets of Healthy People 2020, including targets related to communication, correct information, timing, and patient satisfaction or client satisfaction. And it's very important for nurses, of course, to understand how culture and socioeconomics and environment all influence health status and therefore act appropriately and effectively with our clients. as we started to conceive of this project back in 2009, we actually looked at the AACN and the Quad Council mandates for us to deliver culturally appropriate care and barriers to that care, including lack of consensus related to content for cultural competency, the approach to cultural competency, the different standards that are used and different definitions, and the limited evaluation of what it actually is. We also wanted to go forward in time, and we believe that it would be important for us to look at our curricula in terms of how does it change over time? How do students develop? So our first of all, we started with what is cultural competency to us? And there are a variety of studies on that. But basically, our conclusion is that cultural competency or cultural development is an ongoing process and is not one particular target. And so we subscribe to the continuum or ongoing process theory of cultural competency. We wanted to test it, and what we chose was Marianne Jeffries' transcultural self-efficacy test because it had been used in a variety of settings, and it had already been established good reliability in both undergraduate nursing and graduate nursing, as well as RN to BS programs, and in beginning practice. And this was our intent, was to go forward. We haven't gotten there yet. This is our three-year project. The way that the tool has been used is through faculty self-assessment, because faculty are often asked to teach things that they may not be competent to teach. Faculty assessment of the active promotion of cultural competency in the curriculum, curricular inquiry, what courses most often develop competency skills, how do these fit with the mission and philosophy of the school, the actual content in courses, and the resource materials that are available to students, and finally, outcome testing, for example, in innovative strategies, if you do something related to changing people's cultural competency, did it work? And so this met all of our requirements. It's a very long tool. For those of you who are not familiar with it, it's 83 questions in three domains, including knowledge, practice, and an affective domain as well. And so I will be talking about those in terms of subscales. Our design was repeat measures annually, pencil and paper, in class, voluntary participation, of course. So we evaluated at the end of sophomore, junior, and senior years of nursing education. And we started with our own university and then decided that we really needed some comparable. So we actually solicited for volunteer institutions. And we ended up with two that were relatively comparable that we could manage with in our with limited funding. so we did ask that the questionnaires be administered. We provided them to our two partners, UMass Dartmouth and Eastern Kentucky University. All three programs actually begin nursing in the second year of a baccalaureate program. So there are prerequisites in the first year and general ed requirements throughout, but the actual beginning of nursing education is in the sophomore year. So for 2009, we have only UVM data. For 2010 and 11, we have University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth. And unfortunately for the Eastern Kentucky University, they were not able to complete the survey in their second year, so we only have 2010 data. So we don't have a full 3 years for all programs. Nonetheless, we have some very interesting results. We did use the TSET, and we also selected certain demographic information. The schools are very much alike in terms of the numbers of students who are in the traditional college age. Most of the students responding were the 20 or 21 years old. Younger, of course, as in the sophomores, they were 19. So traditional out of high school. And then we looked at chi-squares and Spearman's row, actually. So this slide is slightly outdated. But in any event, we did look for actual differences between the groups, between the institutions, between the class level or grade level, as we called it, and between the subscales. So what we really, again, wanted to know was whether there were patterns of development that were discernible, whether any factors that positively affect development could be noted, and that included for us international travel and coursework and cultural understanding. Both UMass Dartmouth and the University of Vermont have some travel immersion courses for nursing students. Not all students can participate, but we do have good samples from both schools. There's less opportunity, however, there were students at Eastern Kentucky University who also had traveled internationally on medical missions and other kinds of school and school-related experiences who were in the mix. Coursework and cultural understanding was one of the questions on our demographic survey. And the problem with this was that students misinterpreted what we intended, and so they gave us all kinds of courses in which they'd had a particular piece about culture, and sometimes their general ed requirements. And so we decided that was probably not really valid information, so I won't be reporting that. And we wanted to build a baseline for then tracking students after graduation to see whether this really makes any difference at all in practice. All right, and those are basically the same kinds of questions. The one difference here is that we wanted to know whether students who score high or low, whether they follow that pattern or whether their patterns change. Jeffries reports that there are students divide themselves into, when given a Likert-type scale, into low scorers, medium scorers, and high scorers. And so we wanted to see whether there was any change in or movement between those categories within aggregate class scores. Now, we did look at aggregates. We did not track individual students. And that, I think, was probably, it was intentional on our part because we wanted to know about the aggregates. However, it might have been a methodological mistake. All right, so here were our responses. And as you can see, Eastern Kentucky, we only have 2010. We have good samples from our classes, and one of the advantages is doing it in class so that you have an audience that's sitting there. They can still choose not to fill out the questionnaire. They can get up and leave. They were all told that. Nonetheless, many of them, given the questionnaire right in front of them, will actually complete it. So we had good response rate. We do have the option and we have permission to do this online. We feel that our results will not be nearly as strong. All right, now looking at self-confidence, because what the Jeffries scale actually does is it measures a student's perception or their self-efficacy of their abilities. Now, the three scales, cognitive subscale, actually asks them about, do you have the knowledge to do this? Do you have the knowledge to provide culturally competent care? And it asks it in 26 questions from everything from what are the cultural practices to do you know what to do about it? And here we find that if we look at our first year, or our students in the first year of testing, you can see that the sophomores have a greater percentage scoring in the low confidence level versus a very high number of students scoring in the middle range and a low high. Our juniors look different in terms of there are fewer in the low and more in the middle and still not too many in the high. And seniors, interestingly enough, all tend towards the middle. And we thought, what is that all about? And so one of the things that we felt, well, maybe as they don't know what they don't know as sophomores, they have their confidence shaken a little bit as juniors, and by the time they're seniors, they have their confidence shaken even a little more, and they're preparing. Now, these are given at the end of the year in late April. So we thought possibly they begin to realize their limitations before they go out into practice. Practical subscales, you can see that here the sophomores were down, but the seniors actually improved in their confidence level, but again tending towards the middle. Not so many in the high group. So the high confidence level seniors are about half of what the sophomores were, and that really struck us as quite unusual. And that's when we decided we really needed to see what other schools were doing. Affective tends to be the subscale that is most stable over time. I think this has something to do with nursing. I mean, all of the questions are directed towards nursing, but I think students tend to see themselves as being compassionate, caring individuals who will relate to people of all cultures. And so over time, I think that the affective scale shows less movement between low, medium, and high scores. All right, so when we looked at 10, you can see that the scores tend towards the middle. That's because they're general means. But that we look somewhat different from UMass Dartmouth and from Eastern Kentucky University. Now, interestingly, Eastern Kentucky University seems to have the strongest or highest scores, and we wondered what that was about. Was it just an artifact of 1 year, or was there something else going on? And once again, we questioned whether, since very few of those students had had any kind of cultural competency courses and very few had traveled, whether it was a question of did they not know what they didn't know. And so we queried the faculty involved, and that was one of the hypotheses. We can't prove it, of course. Looking at 2011, which was this last year, essentially we also see some differences between University of Vermont and the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth, and these are significantly different, actually. In terms of the level of confidence. And so we wondered what that was about. And there were some clues in the demographics. And one was travel, and one was particular courses that were identified as being strong in cultural areas, including, for example, work with older adults as a cultural subset. So now, what we do was go back and look. These are for the UVM, looking at the sophomore classes for UVM. And basically, what we've discovered is that one class doesn't look like another. So that causes us a little bit of question in terms of, is this just normal variation from year to year? Is there something that's happening in the environment that changes what goes on in the sophomore year? And we know that this is the cognitive subscale, which varies the most, What we do know is that we implemented some new things in the sophomore year between these three classes, and so perhaps they reduce students' confidence at the end of the year. In the practical subscale, the same thing basically happens. And here again, what we know is that we changed over in 2010 to a high-fidelity simulation center where they are tested practically on their cultural competency skills as well as their nursing skills. And so, once again, they may feel less confident as a result of that. And then finally, on the affective scale there, we discovered that there was more, why were the results negative? And so we are a little bit concerned about what happened to the affective scale for our students at UVM in the year 2011. Now, the question that we raised for this particular presentation was, does travel influence confidence? There was no, and looking at both UMass Dartmouth, EKU, and the University of Vermont, there was no significant difference between those who had an immersion travel experience and those who did not. And that went across all domains and all institutions. However, at UVM, we had scores that approached significance, and at UMass Dartmouth the same. Increased confidence was shown by participants at UMass Dartmouth who had traveled. And what the indicator, the subscale that was most affected, was the cognitive subscale, not the practical or affective. This happens to be a picture of my travels in Uganda with students. Okay, we didn't see changes between juniors and seniors when we just looked at cross-sectionally how juniors behaved and how seniors behaved, but we watched what happened over cohorts. The differences between the cohorts at the sophomore level are probably due to changes in the introductory courses requirements and our use of the clinical simulation lab. We also found that, as mentioned already, aging seemed to be a strength at UMass Dartmouth, which was not a strength at UVM. This means that we can work on that ability across cultures in our curriculum to strengthen students' knowledge and confidence in working with older adults, which is, of course, very important for demographics. We didn't find any differences in confidence between genders. However, that's probably due to small sample size, but we did find some anecdotal evidence of higher, very high confidence levels amongst former members of the armed services. And so we don't know whether that's age or whether that's actual practical experience or both. So we're still moving forward on this research. We're questioning now whether the TSET is the best available measure or if it's a measure that we can use perhaps once when students come in before their sophomore education and at their at exit. So we're playing with that idea. What other measures to use? Can we really measure performance? That's where we're going next, is to put self-perception with actual performance. And then we have a question about whether the impact of the repeated measures is causing some negativity. We did find students who lined through total responses on a page, so I know that they get test fatigue. And by the time they're seniors, we test them in many, many areas. And finally, we're still working on the real impact of immersion and diversity education. And one of the things that we have done is to develop more courses that take students abroad, which we will be measuring both qualitatively and quantitatively. So thank you, and we'll have questions at the end. Thank you.